Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeri. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio.
Have you ever said this to yourself? I'll be happy if fill in the blank. Or I'll be happy once fill in the blank, X, Y, and Z happens. Once I get married, once I have a child, once I buy a house. And where there are always things, once I get a new job, once I retire, once I save X so much money, once I pay off my debt. We tend to think about happiness as something that will be attained in the future, but it seems to be that it's always something that's attainable in the future. But we're never quite satisfied when we have what we thought would make us happy in the future. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri. It's our weekly happy hour every Monday here on Trending, ultimately working toward discovering the virtue of joy in our lives. But who doesn't want to be happier? Joining me in just a little bit will be Father Robert Spitzer. You may know him from the Magicenter and much of his great work that he has done, including his very own show that he has, Father Spitzer's World. So we'll talk with him in just a little bit. We're going to talk about how desire influences our happiness, as well as finding true happiness. In fact, Father Robert Spitzer wrote a whole book on this idea. We're also going to dive into the topic of the March for Life and Walk for Life and the Roe versus Wade anniversary that happened this weekend, giving you a little bit of an update on the marches and walks and the people that it drew in across the nation. And we'll continue with a pro-life update tomorrow, as a lot's happening as we anticipate the forthcoming decision from the Supreme Court of the United States of America on the future of abortion in this country, and ultimately what we will hope to see, the overturning of Roe versus Wade and the decisions going back to the individual states. Again, you're joining us during our weekly happy hour. I'd love for you to fill in the gap. I'll be happy if whatever it might be for you, or I'll be happy once something happens, once you have something. Love to hear your thoughts. You can comment now and share your thought on Instagram, fill in that gap at Timmeri. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Joining me now today on Trending, a much beloved guest of Trending, it's been a little while since we've spoken to him, is Father Robert Spitzer. If you have not heard Father Robert Spitzer, his work is well renowned. He's the host of Father Spitzer's Universe. He's also the president and co-founder of the Magis Center. That's magiscenter.com. If you'd like to check out the incredible work, from books available, full free online curriculums, especially addressing the crisis of skepticism in our culture, and ultimately the pursuit of truth, beauty, goodness, and might I add, happiness. He's the author of a book that we discussed some time ago on Trending called Finding True Happiness. We'll include a link in the podcast notes for today's show. And you may recall we recently walked through with him before the 4 levels of happiness. We'll break down a little bit of that today on the show. We'll also include a link to that on social media now where we discuss the 4 levels of happiness. Today, I want to dive into the topic of how our desires influence our happiness. Father Spitzer, welcome back to Trending.
Always great to be with you, Timmeri.
Let's talk about how our desires influence our happiness. So often we tend to make this claim, well, I'll be happy once I have X, Y, and Z. And there are so many levels of happiness. At the end of the day, how important is desire to our happiness?
Right. Well, we have about, we have a lot of inbuilt desires, but we can classify them in 4 major areas, which are really hierarchical, and I'll explain why in just a moment. But one group of desires come under what we might call bodily desires. It would be desires that are connected with your physical nature, that would be connected with your nervous system, that would be connected with external stimuli that somehow attach themselves or stimulate your body, processed through the nervous system to the brain. So let's just call them material desires or bodily desires, something along that line. But remember, they're physical. Mm. They're linked to our nervous system, our brain.
And are they a little more on the side? Quick question. Are they more mm-hmm. so on the side of our instincts kicking in? Like we get this dopamine kick, which reminds us that eating was pleasurable, and so we desire food.
Oh, yes. Very much so. In fact, okay. There's a lot of programming going on in the brain. Every time you like something, it definitely registers in the brain, which produces an even stronger craving the next time around. If it was a very pleasant experience in the first time.
So could be food, no question about video games, any number of things today.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could be kinesthetic, like video games, but it could also even be, you know, riding around in a really good Mercedes 500 E-Class with leather upholstery in the sense of just having that that feel of fine German engineering. Mm. It could also be, you know, a variety of other things. So long as it's really going through the central nervous system, connecting with the brain, hitting the body, external stimuli. That's the basic idea.
Excellent. So what's the second type of desire?
Yeah, the second grouping of desires, these would come from, you know, a fundamental, you know, self-awareness that we get, you know, from the soul, basically. Self-consciousness is really quite a mystery. It's called the hard problem of consciousness in my area in philosophy of science and philosophy of mind. And in this area, basically, we have this capacity to be aware of our awareness. That is to say, we're not just aware of the desk in front of me. We're aware of being aware of the desk in front of us. And this produces a myriad of different possibilities and potentialities. But it really, in my view, I don't think you can get self-consciousness through any other means except the soul. And so God really does give us this capacity for self-consciousness. But the first, you know, dimension of self-consciousness, this creation of our own inner world, right? When we capture ourselves, capturing ourselves, we've got our own inner universe. And we juxtapose our inner universe to the outer universe out there, the outer world. And so in a way, we have this great grasp, but our first instinct, if I can put it that way, the first thing that we're driven to by self-consciousness is to be egotistical, to be honest with you. I'd like to shift the locus of control from the outer world to me, to my inner world. And that's a natural ego-driven desire, which every child, once that self-consciousness kicks in, right, watch out, because they'll discover the word no, and when they do, they have become independent free agents, and as you know, with a nice little child there, this can become quite interesting, dealing with another human free agent. But the point, of course, is then the ego comparative games begin to manifest themselves, right?
You
so that desire to shift the locus of control.
Father, you actually give an incredible example in your book, speaking of children, and again, being a mom of a one-year-old now, it was fascinating to think about how kids start to develop this egotistical side of desire and self-understanding, that self-awareness. And you gave the story example of how a kid can actually believe that the sun is following them. Can you explain that? Because it's kind of mind-blowing to think that, like, how self-centered we can be and how that's a very naive but also adolescent view of the world. And it really made me realize a lot of us are stuck in this adolescent perspective of a lack of development of desire and self-consciousness.
Yeah, Jean Piaget, very famous child psychologist, you know, said one of the first manifestations that you notice of children's egocentricity, which is very natural, is they really believe that the sun is following them. The sun is for them. They're not sort of, as it were, having to follow the sun. the reason the sun, you know, the sun's going around them. They're the center of the world. They really believe that. And it takes the parent to come and say, no, no, the sun is not, you know, following you. You know, the sun is independent of you. And you and me and the whole other part of the world around us, why, we're just, you know, accountable in some way. We have to subject ourselves to the movement of the sun, which is completely independent of us. And it takes a little while for the child to sort of get it. They really do believe they are in the center of the universe, and things, because, you know, parents try to meet the needs of their children and so forth, right? They you know, provide things almost instantly when they cry. And so kids begin to get this sense of, well, it's all about me. And little wonder that when they get to adolescence, they take that with them. They really have a very strong sense of independence, a very strong sense of the world is there to serve me, instead of, hey, wait a minute, I might have to get out there and not only you know, serve the world in some sense, but I might be subject to the forces of nature around
me. Reality.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yes, that's one of the great powers of self-consciousness, is it can make us egotistical. And once we get to that, you'll notice right away, as, you know, the child gets to be 5, 6 years old, they're going to start comparing themselves to everybody around them. Who's achieving more? Who's achieving less? Who's got more power, less power, more status, less status, more intelligence, less intelligence, more talent, less talent, more athletic ability, et cetera, et cetera. And it goes on and on and on. And they compare endlessly to one another. And sometimes, of course, they can be very rude and dominant and make fun of the kids who may not have as much as they do. And sometimes they can be as nice as they can be. They kind of figure out sometimes. We'll talk about contribution and ethics in just a moment. But literally, they can be quite domineering if you allow them. And that's why parents need to say, hey, you need to share with your brother, or hey, you know, you can't speak like that to me. I'm your parent, you know, and if you don't lay down the law, their natural instinct is to really believe that they are at the center of the universe. And so, you know, of course, I love to indulge my nieces and nephews. I just love it. But, you know, my sister has an instinct for, oh, do not say that too much, you know. And so you have to, in some sense, draw a line. And that's perfectly normal, perfect parental training. But self-consciousness and egocentricity, it's a powerful set of desires. But the whole point, of course, is the locus of control is coming to me. I'm the guy. It's all about me.
We'll have to come back to a little bit how even social media is influencing this, because I think that the social media culture, the digital platform, I mean, this new trend of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and others wanting us to literally live in the metaverse and have, you know, these digital identities, it's fascinating to see how this may impact this lower level of happiness. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, you know, there's been this huge, I hope you don't mind me saying all these negative statistics, but a huge increase in depression, anxiety. This is all pre-COVID, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts, et cetera, et cetera. Most of these things have happened, I think, as a result of Facebook, Instagram, social media in general, because what it has done is it has really heightened, exacerbated, you know, already the egocentricity of the normal adolescent, right? Every adolescent, you know, deep down is a narcissist, you know, and they have to kind of find their way out of it through their parents, their families, their religion, and sort of a discipline. But imagine for a second, if the parents really don't do that, they have no real religion at home that speaks to the necessity of serving others, etc. And imagine that you're on social media, always portraying yourself in some great light, trying to, you know, best the next person, go to the best party and not the next best party, and so forth and so on. Here's a picture of me doing this fascinating thing. And of course, it's just exacerbating the all about me syndrome. And the problem with that is you can see that the depression rate and the anxiety rate go up in direct proportion to the amount of time spent on social media. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the religion rate and participation in religion goes down with the amount of time spent on social media, unless there is the mitigating factor of a very strong religious family, which somehow kind of blends the identities together. But most kids do not. The more time they're spending on social media, the more the religious commitment, the sense of being, you know, as it were, before God and responsible to God, the more that kind of dissipates and decreases. Mm-hmm. So we've got a real problem there. But here's the interesting thing. The American Psychiatric Association did these studies and showed essentially that if you stop practicing religion, your depression rate and your anxiety rate are going to go skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's between 2 to 3 times higher if you are not participating actively in a religion. That's depression and anxiety. And I must admit, suicides as well. That's the big 2004 Kenita Dervick study. But it's been since verified by 6 other major studies that show the very same thing. Well, now just, you know, for a second, think of this. You've got Instagram social media participation going way, way up. And now just that alone produces an increase in depression and anxiety and suicide and suicidal ideation. Now you go the other side of the route and you say, oh, it's also making religion go down. And religion, if religious participation goes down, depression, anxiety goes up. Little wonder in 10 years that we did that we got basically a 57% increase in depression, a 63% increase in anxiety. This is among adolescents and teens and adolescents and even late 20s, right? We got this 63% increase in anxiety and then a 56% increase in suicides in 10 years pre-COVID. I mean, this is not right. A good trend.
And the COVID, numbers have only been exacerbated the last 2 years with COVID.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, our kids are actually, because of the isolation from COVID, they're actually increasing their social media use. Right. And so it's like this double bad effect. And little wonder now we have seen a doubling and tripling post-COVID, right? Suicides, anxiety, depression. So this is not good, but it's level 2, this comparison game stuff. It's right in the middle of it. I mean, these kids wanting facial surgery at 13, 14, 15 years old and are literally trying to look like their made up Facebook images, you know, where your features are kind of softened and enhanced to look more beautiful, etc. They now want surgical procedures at 13, 14 years old to look like their Facebook images.
Yes. And it's fascinating because you know what's funny about this? And if you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly happy hour here on Trending with Timory. We're talking about how our desire influences our happiness. What you just pointed to, it always really weirded me out when the filters first started coming out for the iPhones, where you could, you know, sit side by side with someone else and they can morph the two faces together, or where you could become, you know, cat-like looking or elephant-like looking. I always was creeped out. I said, don't put that in front of me. I don't want to look at it. Yeah. But what you're saying is fascinating because, you know, there was something for some people who had a gut reaction. There was something to it it was overwhelming. And I'm wondering, you know, psychologically, if there was this overwhelming element because, you know, there was that protection. If you went too far, there would be this desire. And even just looking at it, for example, as a mom of a 1-year-old, sometimes I'll put my baby in, you know, a cute little outfit or, you know, do her hair up and I'll think, oh, let's go take her to the mirror so she can see herself. But at the same time, you know, there's a balance with how much you present yourself to the mirror before you start to desire to tweak what you're looking at if you look in at yourself too often. Because you have this comparison expectation, but with technology today and with the photo editing and the angling, there's this constant self-criticism that goes so deep. It's interesting. Because I would like to hear, Father Spitzer, what your thoughts are. Joining me now is Father Robert Spitzer from the Magi Center. How do you think this plays into the transgender craze that we're seeing today, this ego comparative dimension?
Well, first of all, people are not looking for their identity to their biology. They're not looking to anything like their talents, what could be developed in the future. Basically, what they're looking to get identity is what they want to be. It's like a sort of a dream world. So the first thing you notice is that if that's what you really think your identity consists in, your strongest desire of the moment, this is a mental desire. It's not necessarily based in reality at all, right? It may not be based in your body type, may not be based in your talents. You might say, I'd like to be president of the United States. I'd like to, and you know, whatever I can do to be president of the United States, I'll go ahead and get that done. So that's who I am. And, you know, I'm president. That's who I am. So that's who I'm going to be, a great intellectual. That's who I am. But wait a minute, there's this other thing. Do you have the intellectual gifts? Do you have the discipline to be the great intellectual you dream yourself, you wish yourself to be? So that's the first part of the transgender equation, which is really, a difficulty in our culture, is that, man, we are a culture of wish fulfillments, 95% of which are never, you know, going to be fulfilled. It's like the Princess Bride line, get ready to be disappointed, right? And so the idea then is, that's the first thing. But the second thing is now the medical community comes along and they tell you it's all possible. We can do it. You know, just get your hormone treatment starting today and we can get the surgery out. We can get it ready to go and your problems will be over. And there is the false promise from the medical and the psychological community, the false promise that goes along with the I can declare myself to be who I want to be and that's who I will be. That false promise is put out there in a lot of psychological circles. A lot of psychologists and psychiatrists, however, feel that this is the worst possible thing in the world and that it is medically unethical to ever say this. Why? Because the little child, before the desire for the trends, when the cross-gender confusion starts, let's take a look at the three factors that are almost always present when a child suddenly says, I've got a lot of anxiety. And the way out of my anxiety is to get a sex change. My anxiety is caused by the fact that I'm a boy in a girl's body, or I'm a girl in a boy's body. So that's the first thing that happens. And the kid thinks my anxiety comes, but it doesn't come from there. What the anxiety comes from is, first of all, in 60% of cases, these children have been physically or sexually abused. That's a big percentage of the kids who have what's called cross-gender confusion anxieties, right? So the anxiety is caused by that, but they think it has to do with their gender. They're processing it in a different way. If they were a different gender, they would have been respected. They would not have been abused. That's what goes through the kid's mind. You really need therapy to get it out of the kid's mind. There's the second thing. Oftentimes in the family, about 60 to 70% of the time, there's anxiety on the part of one of the parents. And it's normally the parent of the opposite gender of the child. So the boy says, my mom, you know, he's processing, right? My mom has anxiety. My mom is upset. My mom must be mad at me. Now, the reason my mom is mad at me is because she wanted a girl and I turned out to be a boy. Now, you go, that's ridiculous. Of course, a set of non sequiturs. Who could think this? Kids, that's exactly how they think through this thing. And the next thing you know is all of a sudden they go, well, gosh, if I just get a sex change, then I'll be the girl that my mother always wanted to be. She's just mad at the fact that I came out the wrong way. Then there's a third, element that's also present, and that's latent homosexual desires may be also involved. So, I mean, the trifecta is you put all three desires together, and you've got a kid who's sitting on a a time bomb of real explosive, desire coming out. And he says, I know what the solution to my problem is. I need a sex change. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine that you're this kid, and instead of a psychiatrist or psychologist or a doctor saying, hey, you and your parents just have to have a little therapy here, because about, 90% of the time, the kid will go back to their biological sex, actually with very little therapy. But sometimes you do need the therapy to get over the anxiety. Can't leave the anxiety untreated. But right. Here is where the myth breaks
we'll
down.
We'll have to come right back here in a moment to continue to dive into the various levels of desire, how they influence us, and wrap up this understanding of how this ego comparative culture is also influencing the transgender trend that's occurring in the culture. That's Father Robert Spitzer from the Magis Center. You can find him at magiscenter.com. We'll be right back for our weekly happy hour. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school-at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's happy hour today on Trending, as is every Monday. Joining me is Father Robert Spitzer. He's a host of Spitzer's Universe. He's a president and co-founder of the Magis Center. You can find his work at magiscenter.com. That's M-A-G-I-S center.com. Incredible curriculum and free resources to go deeper in your faith, especially confronting a scientific and skeptical approach to our faith that so many people, especially millennials today, are struggling with. We're talking about how desire influences our happiness. He wrote an incredible book called Finding True Happiness. I highly recommend it. And we're talking about these four types of desire. And I want to continue to dive into these desires, Father Spitzer. You first mentioned the biological desire that really hits on our nervous system, hits on, external stimuli, base level desires, but it can even be impacted by everything from, choice things that we enjoy, from social media to food to riding a certain type of car. The second level of desire you've been talking about has been ego comparative desire. Mm-hmm. And it's how we measure up to others, but also how we view ourselves. Can you share with us a little bit more about these desires and how this influences our happiness?
Yeah. So we, obviously there are very legitimate ego comparative desires too, right? Everybody has to have some self-esteem. Everybody wants to be competitive, right? You just don't want to be run over by the competition. You have to have a decent sense of yourself to be a good debater. So, right, as St. Augustine or, St. Ambrose, they certainly, were not milquetoasts, right? They certainly rose up, to be competitive, and they certainly believed in themselves, but they were not living for who's achieving more, who's achieving less, who's more intelligent, who's less intelligent, who's smarter, less smart, et cetera, who's, got more, prestige or popularity, who has less prestige and popularity, who's a winner and who's a loser. They didn't, that was not, when St. Augustine was going about, before his conversion in his sinful mode, he definitely was ego comparative to the max, but he grows out of it into two other identity fulcrums that have the, because if you let ego comparative identity get going, right, it's going to wind up, you're going to see depression, as we just talked about. You're going to see anxiety, as we just talked about. You're also going to see, by the way, jealousy, fear of failure, fear of loss of esteem, ego rage, where you're blaming everybody for everything, and of course, ego blame, self-pity, right, when you blame yourself for everything, and the list goes on, but these are all really big debilitators. And when I talk to a group of young people about this, they know right away, wow, that pertains to me. This is the range of emotions I have felt for the last 3 months. And no wonder I feel suicidal. No wonder I feel, you know, a huge surge of anxiety. No wonder I can't sleep at night. No wonder I'm having panic attacks. Yep, ego comparative identity. It's right in the middle of the whole thing. People are looking for, well, maybe there's some biological reason. Maybe there was a trauma in your past life. Maybe it's possible. But the vast majority of the time, it's living for the wrong thing, looking for the wrong kind of happiness, ego comparative happiness. And so, like I said, St. Augustine graduated from that, and he figured out there are two other kinds of happiness, which, by the way, a huge number of psychologists, philosophers, theologians would all agree on. Hey, imagine that. Psychologists and religious people and philosophers all agreeing on something.
It's a miracle. Or it's truth, reality.
Exactly. So anyway, but so he said, well, first of all, you know, we should be contributive. And that really is level three. Is contributive happiness. So I'm happy when I'm making an optimal positive difference to somebody or something beyond myself. I'm happy when I'm making an optimal positive difference to my family, to my friends, to the community around me, to my church, to the kingdom of God. If I'm so lucky, maybe even to the society or the culture. I can make a difference also to the organization I work for, or if I'm a student, the school that I'm participating in, et cetera, et cetera. So all these things, right? If I'm trying to make an optimal positive difference with my life, I'm never going to wake up when I'm 80 years old and go, what was the difference between the value of my life and that of a rock? I won't have to say, well, I was probably a little less than the rock in terms of value because all I ever did was look out after myself for no one else, made no contribution, but I was a winner. I was a level two winner. I was smarter than everybody, and I had more status than everybody, and I got more promotions than everybody, and I was wealthier than everybody. But yeah, basically a little less than the rock in terms of net value to the world, net value to the kingdom of God, net value to my family. Pretty much a negative. Now, if you did that, you would be in incipient despair because nobody, absolutely nobody can believe that their life really made no difference to anybody or anything beyond themselves. It's just impossible. But if you switch it, if you get scared and you go, oh my gosh, I'm really on the verge of living a meaningless kind of worthless life to a worthless kind of know-nothing, legacy. If that's where I'm going, hopefully the incipient despair, hopefully the anxiety, the emptiness, the loneliness, the dread that one feels when, you know, you begin to do something like that, when you really think, you know, I'm a nothing in the world. I look at myself in the mirror and all I get back is sort of this feeling of a empty vacuum in the pit of my stomach, a sense of alienation from myself. I'm not at home here. I'm out of kilter with the whole of reality. And of course, a sense of tremendous loneliness as well. All of a sudden, maybe you get that panic attack and you go, what am I going to do with my life? Well, one suggestion, which I think, as I said, philosophers, theologians, and psychologists universally agree is do something for somebody. Serve somebody beyond yourself. Try to optimize the good you can do for your family, for your friends, for the institutions and organizations you work for your church, for the kingdom of God, for the culture if you're so lucky, etc. It'll make all the difference in the world because all those other anxieties, the emptiness, the loneliness, the fear of failure, the jealousy, the depression, the inferiority, the superiority, the ego rage, the ego blame, self-pity just begins to disappear. The moment you say it's not about me being better than the rest of the world, what really matters is how much I would like to do with my time, my talent, my energies, the way that I can. I want to make an optimal positive difference in the world. And you start living for that. And all of a sudden, you don't have to be better than everybody anymore. And it really doesn't matter that you had 20 more IQ points than me. The only thing that matters is at the end of the day, I did as much good as I could with the talents and energy that I had with my life. And that suddenly not only makes us happier, it makes us happier on a higher level, on a kind of a spiritual level, because mm-hmm. now we know that our lives are making a difference to the world around us.
It's a game changer, I think, for a lot of people who are stuck in the ego comparative dimension, but also for those who struggle with pusillanimity, you know, this idea of like thinking that they're too lowly, but in reality, it's kind of almost this warped view of viewing yourself too so highly that you self-indulge and kind of leave yourself in that misery. In reality, whether you're struggling with true egotistical mentality or in comparing yourself or stuck in that, well, I have nothing to offer, the same goes, this contributive mm-hmm. step takes you into the next level of desire that is far more fulfilling than an internal turning in on ourselves.
Yeah, and that's right. And so that's one stage, but then it even goes to another stage if you're ready for it, and another kind of happiness.
Yes, let's dive into the fourth level of happiness that I think is the bridge for helping where the dimension of skepticism enters in. If you could speak as you're explaining it also to how this is what can help us in drawing our loved ones in who are struggling with happiness, but also struggling with the idea of God as well. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. I think we had a little connection issue with Father Spitzer. We're going to work on it, getting him right back. But as we talk about this, if you're just joining us, Father Robert Spitzer's book, Finding True Happiness, is an incredible book. And we're walking through the four types of desire that are available. So Father Spitzer is going to explain to us that fourth level of happiness now. Oh, I think we're still having issues. So as we get him back again, Finding True Happiness is the book. And one of the things I love about this book is it's one in a four-part series. And one of the goals of this series is to help our loved ones who are struggling with skepticism, maybe even ourselves, start with the idea of happiness to ultimately draw them to God. And so this is, you know, the beginning level. Who doesn't desire happiness? But this is also where the four levels of happiness take us. So Father Robert Spitzer is back with us, and he's going to explain that fourth level of happiness.
Sorry about that, Demery. Anyway, going back to the time of Plato there, what Plato discovered was human beings have this desire for ultimacy as well. It's a fourth group of desires, a fourth level of desires. It's the highest one of all because it's the most pervasive, enduring, and deep. And so what Plato discovered was, what really makes us happy is not just some truth, but perfect truth. What really makes us happy is not just some goodness, but perfect goodness. What really makes us happy is not just some beauty, but perfect beauty. And by the way, perfect home and perfect love. Now, of course, you think about that and you go, well, that's impossible. There's no such thing as perfect truth, love, goodness, beauty, and home. Well, yes, there is. And it's God. And of course, that's why St. Augustine discovers this, right? In his own life, he begins to see, more and more that he's unhappy. Even when he's contributive, even when he's at the best of his game, he's got level two highs, level three highs, but he's still empty. He's still alienated. He's still lonely. He's still facing the abyss. And he discovers that the reason is because what he really needs is eternity. He's never going to be happy with merely the here and now. He's never going to be really happy with just, material happiness. He knows that he's made for perfect truth, love, goodness, beauty, and being forever. And he suddenly just, well, where am I going to get this? Is this just pie in the sky? And the answer is no. Where you're going to get it is from God. And Augustine responds immediately. At the very beginning of his confessions, almost the first line, he says, "For thou hast made us for thyself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in thee." He's speaking with God. And the reason he says it is because God alone is perfect truth, love, goodness, beauty, and home. God alone is eternity. God alone can satisfy our desires for perfect truth, love, goodness, beauty, and home, and eternity. He alone is our rock of safety, our fulfillment, our identity, our dignity. And we're made for him. And he calls us for himself. And if we ignore God, if we ignore our religious sensibility, then of course what happens is we become depressed, or we become anxious, or we become dependent on, you know, whatever it is, Instagram, Facebook, to try and fill in the emptiness, the loneliness, the dread, the alienation of having ignored God, having ignored our ultimate home, our ultimate goodness, our ultimate dignity, our ultimate beauty, our ultimate truth, all the things we yearn for in our hearts, we try to make up for it. But Instagram will never make up, because Instagram will never be ultimate. Instagram can only enhance your ego. It can never enhance reality, truth, love, goodness, beauty, and home. You need God to do that. And so Augustine finally discovers, oh my gosh, here I have been throughout my life trying to find, you know, ultimate happiness wherever I could find it. And it turns out my mother was right all along. I can only find it in religion. Now, Augustine, he was a very rational guy. I would say at least 30 IQ points higher than me. So first thing to note is that this guy is like super smart. And so he goes through in this book called The Confessions, he goes through his arguments for the existence of God. Now, today, of course, we can do this scientifically. And that's what I do in my book. I'm just finishing up a new book right now called Science at the Doorstep to God. And, you know, looking at, you know, the Bartholinken and Guth proof or entropy evidence or whatever it may be. But I'm trying to help the students to see that God is not an irrational answer. God is not wishful thinking. God is the ultimate answer. He's ultimate reality. There is no reality that is higher than he. If you want to be a realist, the last thing you want to do is deny God, because you're denying the really real. Everything else is just subordinately real. So the point is, you can actually prove that. You can prove it philosophically. You can actually show that we need an intelligent creator of our universe by examining the fine-tuning of universal constants. And by the way, you're not going to get an answer to the fine-tuning of universal constants by looking for a multiverse, even an ultimate multiverse with eternal inflation. That'll never work because, well, first of all, the eternal multiverse and eternal inflation doesn't work, as Stephen Hawking said in his last 2016 paper. But the point I'm trying to get to is, you can be rational about this move to God. You can be just as rational as St. Augustine, just as scientific as, so many of the new scientists that are now coming out. 66% of scientists, young scientists, this is the 40 years old and younger group of scientists, 66% are believers in God. Why do you think that's the case if these guys are rational individuals?
Wow, that's incredible. That's Father Robert Spitzer. You can find him at themagiscenter.com, M-A-G-I-S-Center.com. Finding True Happiness is the book, helping us to reasonably make our way, not just to happiness, but ultimately to God, that fourth level of happiness. Thank you so much for joining us, Father Spitzer. We'll be right back for our happy hour. Solidarity HealthShare now offers a new program called Solidarity One. With Solidarity One, members decide what healthcare options best fit their needs and with the flexibility to meet any budget. Learn more at CatholicHealthShare.com.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It is our weekly happy hour on Trending, and every week we dive into the topic of how can we ultimately achieve happiness, but not just that momentary fleeting emotion of happiness, but actual joy that's ultimately rooted in God. If you weren't with us, Father Robert Spitzer from the Magis Center joined me, and we walked through the four levels of happiness based on how our desires influence our happiness. Fascinating conversation. I hope you'll head back to the podcast. It'll be available tonight. If you didn't catch the full episode, relevantradio.com/trending. You can find the episode or wherever you like to catch your podcasts. Now, just to let you know, tomorrow we're going to dive into the awesome news from the weekend, marking the 49th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. Although a very solemn day, pondering over 62, if not many more, millions of lives lost just in the United States since the legalization of abortion across the nation. What we did see this weekend was that even in the face of all the lockdowns and the restrictions, even in places such as Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Los Angeles, people came out in thousands, not just the thousands, but in the 10,000s and hundreds of thousands. 150,000 people walked in the March for Life in Washington, D.C., over 20,000 the Walk for Life in San Francisco, and many other walks across the nation gathered thousands over the last couple of weeks. We have a challenge ahead of us. We have a current administration, President Biden and Vice President Harris, releasing a shocking statement, although continues to remind us the truth of where they stand on abortion. I'll share that with you tomorrow on Trending. But join me tomorrow as we'll talk about our marching orders, whether you were at a march or a walk this weekend or not. But we'll also remember that the future is pro-life and that other people are pro-life across this nation in droves and the thousands. We were reminded of this. So please join me tomorrow on Trending as we talk about the future of a life in our nation and our marching orders as the battleground may be changing. As we continue to dive into our weekly happy hour here on Trending, there's one attitude that I find most prevalent surrounding the crisis of happiness in our culture. And it's something that we all say to ourselves, although we might not quite say the word happy. But it's this. I'm sure maybe you've even said it to yourself today. I'll be happy if. Fill in the blank. I'll be happy once. Fill in the blank. This idea of, well, I'll be happy if I just make $5,000 more a year because that will help me, you know, each month because I'm just a little shy in terms of what I need for my monthly budget. Or I'll be happy when I have a child, when I get married, when I get a raise. All of these things that we say, we will not be happy until then. And so this is an attitude that must be overcome. Ultimately, it's an attitude that simply and basically resides in desire, saying, I will be happy once I achieve the thing I've chased. But the problem is that for most people, once that thing has been achieved, we've already focused on the next. Or we're miserable in the process of going through it. I laugh because we're buying our first home. We're in escrow right now. You can pray for us. And I was even just thinking, you know, there's this desire to have, you know, a home and to save up money for all of these things. And then all of a sudden you're there. You're like, I'm buying a home, but this is really stressful. There are only so many days. We have less than 30 days already. And how did this already go by? I make the joke, I'm going to pack one box a day until all of the inspections are done, and then from there it's full speed ahead. But you know, I think about it because it's so easy for us to say, well, I'll be happy when this happens. Well, that starts to happen, we become stressed out, or we then achieve that thing, but then we say, well, I won't be happy until I have the next thing. And so this is our challenge, I think, for many of us, is how do we discover that we need to let go of this idea that I will not be happy until X happens, until I have Y, until I'm with so-and-so. How do we overcome that? Especially as people of faith, it's not just a matter of embracing the now. It's a matter of seizing the day, embracing the day, but seeing that God has placed us where we are, even in the midst of our sin, where we sometimes make bad decisions to get to where we're at, that we have, no matter what, the opportunity to embrace holiness, to thrive, where we can totally abandon ourselves to Him and His will. How do you do that? How do you do that? How do you abandon yourself to God's will? Well, one really simple way is to start with divine revelation. What are the Ten Commandments He gave us? What are the Beatitudes He gave us? What are the spiritual and corporal works of mercy He gave us? What am I? Am I male or female? What does this have to do with my identity and my daily interactions with other people? Ultimately, what we're talking to is a striving for holiness and virtue. Today is the feast day of St. Francis de Sales. And if you've never read his book, Introduction to the Devout Life, it is one of those fantastic kicks in the pants for any person of faith. It will truly help you in growing in your faith, but growing in virtue. And in a section in particular where St. Francis de Sales talks about growing in virtue, he talks about how a man who can own pearls does not bother about shells, and those who aspire to virtue do not trouble themselves over honor. What St. Francis de Sales is saying is if you only saw what you had essentially in your faith, you wouldn't constantly be looking for other things in other areas. In other words, we have the great pearl. We don't need the shells. We have the pearl. We have the prize. We have God. So we don't need to go and continue to look to gather our shells. He also says those who aspire for virtue, that's what I said, is our goal. We don't trouble ourselves with honors. We don't trouble ourselves, well, if I had this, I would be more prestigious. I would measure up. I would compare better to others. I would be a greater person in my own eyes. I would be considered successful if I achieved that job. All of these levels of desire that we've talked about all hour here on Trending, at the end of the day, we're seeking truth. And if we can overcome this attitude of I'll be happy only if and when I have X, Y, and Z, and instead embrace holiness, thriving in the will of God, abandoning ourselves to the will of God, even starting to discover self-sacrifice, and ultimately becoming virtuous people, it will be a game changer for discovering happiness, but ultimately joy in our lives. I think of when Jesus Christ is working with some of his disciples in Matthew chapter 8, and one disciple asks, how can I follow you? And Jesus tells him, but then he says, Lord, let me go first and bury my father. In other words, let me do the other things. Let me find happiness. Let me take care of all of this. But the reality is we have God right in front of us. We can choose him now and choose happiness today. Do you believe we'll see the abortion case Roe versus Wade overturned this year? This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Here's the reality. We very well may have a battle state to state determining the future of abortion if Roe versus Wade is over. This weekend at the Walk for Life, we received marching orders. We received inspiration and a calling and a reminder that other people are pro-life. Let's talk about this on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.